This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
And we're back. This is Geeks Walks. My name is Jeff Sandhu, together with Culture Pop's Matt Armitage. Let's talk about cryptocurrency, but in a very different circumstances, because this came out from The Guardian. Apparently, an armed man broke into the family or home of a cryptocurrency trader, and they believe to have forced him at gunpoint to transfer the holdings of his, you know, virtual coins, his bitcoins and whatever coins that he has in the crypto world. And now the police are actually seeking for this man, and he's now left stranded, and, you know, he's just got robbed in the digital world.
Yeah, it's an interesting kind of story, because it's, you know, we're in this world of kind of high-tech transactions, we think of this kind of transaction as being safe. You know, one of the
in a certain way, or if you think like, oh, it might be hacked in a digital sense.
You think it might be hacked in a digital way, but the one of the things about Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies is that they're supposed to be more secure than other banking transactions online. So you have those high levels of cryptography. People can't get into your wallet. In theory, they can't hack your transaction. You have that kind of protection from other people. What we hadn't thought about was...
the human element.
The human element, yes, because having all of this Bitcoin is pretty much the same as storing all of your money underneath your mattress.
Yeah.
It's like keeping it all at home.
But the beauty of this is that this mattress you can take along with you anywhere you go.
Well, the beauty of it and also
and the danger.
Yeah, exactly. So it means that anyone can come, for example, if you're the kind of person who's walking around going, yes, I invested in Bitcoin and I've made an absolute mint over the last 12 months, you could potentially become a target for this kind of robbery. Because not only can somebody come and do it in your home, they can do it when you're out and about. Because the chances are you have some kind of app on your phone which controls all of those Bitcoin that might have a value from... might be a couple of ringgit up to a few million.
Thousands and all,
I mean, yeah, exactly. But, you know, you don't need a bigger phone just because you've got more Bitcoin. Yeah. It all fits in the same place. So if somebody comes along and holds you at gunpoint or knife point and tells you to transfer this money across to them, you're simply going to lose all of your holdings. Because, again, that's another one of the weaknesses of the cryptocurrency world, that once you transfer the money, there's pretty much no way to get it back.
So I guess that it has the problem, you know, that we can't really solve the human problem in you know, crypto will never solve, you know, someone coming up to you with either a gun or a knife and robbing you at you know, gunpoint or knife.
It's not, but it's one of those things that we hadn't considered.
Yeah. It's what happens after you've been robbed by, you know, someone in the crypto world face to face. Because it's hard to justify, like, I was forced to send this transaction.
Oh, sure. I mean, you can always, you know, you can still go to the police and allege a crime, but you probably aren't going to be
You're
able to recover your property. But it's interesting, because when we talk about digital technology, we often don't consider those real-world implications. We don't think when we're on Facebook. I mean, in the same way that people may troll other people and they don't think what the actual effects are to that person in real life. This is the same kind of thing. We have all of these holdings. We have all of this wealth that we hold digitally, but we don't realize how ridiculously easy it is for someone to come and take it physically. It's protected digitally. It's going to be very hard for a hacker to come and take your money away from your phone, but it's relatively easy for, you know, even some young punk kid or whatever to hold you as you're walking in an overpass or whatever and say, give me all your Bitcoin, or simply open up the phone, look for the app, see if you've got anything on there, and if you have, force you to open that up and transfer to some other site. So it is a weakness of this kind of form of currency. I think
there's also like, you know, it's talking about also like decentralization. So the idea of decentralizing everything is like a too far-fetched of like a reality. I think it will be a complete disaster if everything is decentralized, because you then have these kind of problems, right? If you make a transaction, who do you report to? You can't go up to the police. You can't go up to insurance.
You can go to the police, but you can't go to the insurance, because
you're not going to get anything back.
No. I mean, if somebody holds you at gunpoint and takes the contents of your wallet, you don't get that money back.
Yeah.
If somebody hacks into your bank account, by and large, the bank
will reimburse you through insurance and stuff.
Yeah, they will accept the loss so that you don't have to bear it. In this instance, you have
none.
A huge sum of money, but it's essentially the same as carrying it in cash in your wallet. So there is a much greater risk of having this kind of currency than I think people realize. So perhaps if you do have large holdings of this, you keep it on a smartphone or you keep it on a computer and you keep that computer locked away in a security deposit box inside a bank vault so that somebody doesn't have the ability to come and take that money from you.
So one idea is that you could actually use a hardware wallet, which is the size of a thumb drive, and you can just plug that thumb drive in and, you know, transfer all your coins to that one particular thumb drive and then put it in a safe box and never open it because without that you would, you know.
Yeah, exactly, that kind of thing. But as long as you have access to that money instantly, then somebody is going to be able to take that away from you. And that is something that we don't consider, especially as we spend more and more of our time online and we stop thinking so much about what happens in the real world. And in the real world, you might be, you know, your avatar in Warcraft or whatever, maybe, I don't know, whatever level, and you may be incredibly rich in cryptocurrency or whatever points you've earned inside the games. You're probably not thinking about the fact that you're still that same weedy, geeky guy who is going to get whacked over the head with a piece of wood when he walks out of his front door.
So everyone's got to learn how to defend themselves in the future. Hopefully, in one day, you know, you will have like a safety pin that you can key in. So normally, when you make any transactions through any cryptocurrency, you got to key in your pin. So maybe the alternative is to actually have like an alert pin. So where it pretends to send a transaction, but, you know, it's actually alerting.
Nah, because guy's just going to look in his wallet and see if the money's there.
No, so there is maybe it's a phishing number instead, that it may seem like you have the money, but
I think
it's just
a
number.
It would be hard to spoof.
But it's so hard to spoof in the blockchain network.
But I think it's more a case of recognizing that this actually is cash. You wouldn't walk around
holding cash with you.
You wouldn't have $2 million sticking out of the back pocket of your jeans or whatever.
Yeah.
But if you have a smartphone with a Bitcoin wallet on it, that's exactly what you're doing. If you have a lot of money inside that wallet, that is cash that you have on your person. And you're not thinking about that because it's just on your phone. And you're assuming, because it's behind that wall of cryptography, that it's safe. But it's only as safe as your ability to keep hold of parts of your body. If somebody is saying, right, you know, open this or off goes your finger, you're probably going to open it rather than lose parts of your body. So,
My advice is just to get a hardware wallet if you're playing with large amounts of money, because that's just much more secure.
Yeah,
than
exactly.
Storing
don't
in a
have
phone.
It on your person and carry it around with you. Put it somewhere safe.
Yeah, look at one of those hardware wallets and then, you know, link it to maybe just two devices and nothing more. And if you need to add on more devices, there's a secret phrase, like a 12-phrase password that you need to key in before it registers a new device. So, you know, if you make sure you got two devices, not just one, because if one device dies, then you are in deep trouble. But two devices, and don't bring this around with you.
No, exactly. And if you do get into that situation, you have to make that decision.
Yeah.
Which is of more value to you?
Yeah.
The money in your wallet or your child?
Yeah.
I know which I'd choose.
Actually, I'm a bit confused. I'm not quite sure why you would choose, man. But we will not get into that. We'll continue on with Geek Squawks after this. BFM 89.9.
Barry fronts Motown. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
And we're back with Geek Squawks. My name is Jeff Sander, together with Culture Pop's Matt Armitage. Let's talk about Intel. Some of you may have heard about Spectre and Meltdown, just so you're not quite sure what's going on. I've also got an interview coming up soon with someone who's actually making microprocessors, who will really dive into the details about how all these things happen, what is Spectre and Meltdown. But just to give you a wrap up, on the 2nd of January, the Register revealed that Intel CPUs were subject to serious security security vulnerabilities called Spectre and Meltdown. And these are the same kind of techniques that modern-day CPUs uses to improve speed. And that's Spectre's problem. And Intel has 99% of server market share. And they are in almost all major laptops, desktops, your phones, your literally every device, right?
And yeah, besides, and also, it's for the first time people who are using Apple and Linux, those operating systems are also at risk because it's not a virus targeted at the operating system. It's targeted at the chip itself. Yeah, so the flaw is in the hardware.
Yeah, it's in the hardware and it's like dated back 25 years ago or something like that. So besides Spectre, Intel is also subjected to Meltdown. And that's apparently, you know, unique only to Intel at this point of time. No one else has came out and said that, you know, they've also have Meltdown. But the problem with Meltdown is that although the patches have been sent out, they're actually slowing down your machine a lot more than previously thought. And then on 3rd of January, Intel CEO, he had sold millions of dollars of his Intel stock. So, you know, he says, oh, you know, there's no wrongdoings here. You know, it's just kind of like normal thing that's unrelated.
It was a planned transaction.
It was a planned.
It just happened to coincide
the day after. So after CES, where Intel lost the PR battle with AMD because, you know, AMD came out and said, like, no, we're not affected with Meltdown, Intel announced that 90% of the affected processors had live patches. Now, that was apparently great news to a lot of people, but apparently it only worked with some older processors. And worst case scenario is that now a lot of devices are actually rebooting a lot more often after this patch.
Yeah.
So it's not only slower, because they found out that some performances dropped by nearly 25%.
In terms of speed of transactions.
In terms of speed.
In order
to just patch this. Yeah. So now they've patched, they've put a plaster on a leak. And you know, the leak is not that bad, but you realize, hang on a minute, there's just too much of volume going down this pipe, that this pipe is going to blow because...
Yeah, exactly. And also, as you said, it doesn't help that the patches that have come out have serious bugs in them that are actually degrading the performance even further. I think Intel actually asked Microsoft
to stop, work something out.
Yeah, to withdraw the patches because they were... There were too many bugs inside the patches that Microsoft was sending out. So, I mean, this is the kind of chaos going on. This is the kind of mess that you can't imagine. And also, there's no real way to come up with a fix, it would seem, at this point. You either have to accept that your machine
speed is just going to be 25% slower.
Yeah, you're going to lose a huge amount of your speed, or it's going to be vulnerable to these attacks.
Yeah, it's caught us in that limbo, and I feel like, you know, a lot of the problem with the patches that we see these days is just applying plaster after plaster after plaster after plaster instead of let's stop and relook at, you know, from ground up again and let's rebuild something. I guess, yeah, granted, building something from ground up is a lot more, you know, effort, investment. But isn't it time, though, that we really, like, just take a look back? Guys, for the last 25 years, all we demanded was speed. Hence, this is what Spectre and Meltdown has been, you know, caused from this. And now, you have been so attuned that if I'm going to buy a processor, like, you know, 3 quad-core gig processor, you expect that kind of performance, but you are now realizing it's not going to be that fast anymore.
Well, you now need a 4 gig to get 3 gigs.
You now need a 4 gig to get what your mind thinks 3 gigs should be at, right? So our thoughts of how faster that should be, it has to change. Mm.
Yeah, and as you were saying about the adding on, it's like that, you know, there's always somebody in your neighborhood. There's always one house that is always adding extra bits on, and it's always the ugliest house in the neighborhood. And this seems to be what we're doing to our operating systems. You know, we're adding so many things on. When you add to it the news earlier in the month from Apple, where, you know, they admitted to slowing down the performance. To stop damage to the processors. We need companies to start being a lot more transparent, especially with this story, as we've heard that Intel kind of knew about this back in August and let some of the bigger players know so that they could start working on patches, but didn't let the US government know and didn't let, of course, other companies who are still pretty big companies. Yeah, they're just not the size of Amazon.
You know, is Lenovo, for example, one of them. Lenovo, which, you know, is the second largest, they were told much earlier, before the U.S. government knows. And Lenovo, you know, has to report back to, you know, the Chinese government being based there. And the thing is, they came out and said that it was a non-disclosure agreement that we had with Intel, that we will not disclose information to the government and stuff. But we don't know. So there might be some governments who have an advantage in this. And if it does fall into the wrong hands and someone knows about this before the public knows,
yeah, there's a way to exploit. Yeah, of course.
So it's a complete mess.
There's no way, I think, that this can't go the way of the kind of Galaxy Note type size disaster. I think this is going to tarnish Intel's reputation for a long, long time. And I really can't see what the way forward for them is at the moment, because they can only continue to sell compromised chips at this point? Do they have to fundamentally go back and re-engineer the entire architecture? Ooh. How long is that going to take for them to actually overcome these problems?
Yeah. Well, interesting. Anyways, let's move on to the healthcare sector in America, because it's about to have a big change from an A to Z kind of level. Amazon.
Well, yeah, this is the story about Amazon, Jeff Bezos and Warren Buffett teaming up to go into the healthcare market. Now, we all know that healthcare in the US is hugely expensive, and that has big implications for companies like Amazon, because they have a lot of employees. So they're actually paying a lot in medical benefits. Also because Jeff Bezos and Warren Buffett have this kind of progressive agenda as well. So they want to see things changing in society. So they've teamed up to potentially enter the healthcare market and come up with their own products. Because between them, the two companies have, I think, around 100,000 employees. So, so they are, you know, a major force. So what they want to do is actually come up with these kind of more affordable health alternatives. Of course, they're looking more towards technology rather than the kind of traditional medical care. But this could be the kind of shakeup that the US medical industry needs, because what we've seen over the last few years is the consolidation of healthcare providers and the insurance companies, which kind of has this circular income flow. So it's not then in anybody's interest to start reducing costs. So if these guys can come in and blow up that market, I know nobody's really that optimistic when they hear Amazon is coming into a market, because, you know, they tend to just take it over and push all the other competitors out. But this could be one sector where, you know, if the US isn't going to go to a single-payer healthcare system, maybe an Amazon payer healthcare system might be a better alternative to what they've got now. I don't know.
Because you're right in terms of the number of employees they handle and they, you know, the number of employees they have to take care of. That's an increasing cost, and you know they do get tax break from you know, corporate tax breaks. But even that, though.
But no, I mean, it's much simpler to have more affordable care, because then your insurance premiums are less, because the care of each individual is going to be less. So
and SMEs, right? They are the ones who are also affected.
Well, SMEs, but there could also be a knock-on effect for countries like Malaysia, where you have a healthcare system that doesn't have the kind of money in it that the US has. If they can do things that will reduce the cost of medications or reduce the cost of this kind of cutting-edge equipment, you could find these kind of leading-edge diagnostic tools then becoming affordable to countries in the developing world, where there is a huge disparity between the quality and levels of healthcare. So this is a very interesting story. As I said, you're always a little bit wary when you hear about Amazon going into an area. But this is one area that I think that they could make a very big difference for the public good.
Well, talking about cutting down on on insurance and stuff, let's talk about cutting down on production units for the iPhone X, because Apple reportedly is planning to cut down its iPhone X production targets in half, apparently through disappointing holiday season sales. Not surprised. I'm surprised that they even thought they could sell 40 million units, apparently. That's what they thought. But now they're saying that they're going to cut its production target on the first quarter of this year to 20 million instead of a previously thought of 40 million. That's half. That's the first time you hear Apple think, ooh, we need to, you know, produce less of these devices.
Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, I had, a conversation the other day with a friend who was saying she wanted to go and buy an iPhone 10. And she said, but will I be able to get one? Is there a waiting list? And yeah, everyone around the table had that reaction. They're like, no, you can walk into pretty much anywhere and get whatever you want in terms of iPhone 10.
Yeah, it's just overstocked. Yeah, it's oversupplied as well, I think.
I don't necessarily think it's oversupplied. I think the demand just isn't there. The price is too much.
Yeah.
Apple seems to have confused itself with with virtue. You know.
Yeah.
You know, they seem to think that they can build a phone. You know, let's build it out of diamonds and let's build it out of gold. Let's build it out of titanium or whatever rare metals they want to build the thing out of. Yeah, and it costs $30,000 a phone, but we'll sell 40 million units at Christmas. No, you won't, because the demand is relative to the price. When you have all of the Samsung phones, when you have all of the Chinese brands, which are offering this kind of maybe not directly equivalent. Certainly with the Samsung phones, it is directly equivalent. And Apple's phones are, you know, literally $300 or $400 more than a flagship Galaxy. Which is already really, really expensive and double the price of the China ones.
Yeah.
So it absolutely makes no sense. If you already have a minority of the smartphone market, yes, you know that your customers do have more of a bias towards premium and prestige products, but there's still a limit to what people can realistically pay. You cannot put the price based on what everybody around you in Cupertino in California can afford, because not everyone has share options from a Fortune 100 company.
Maybe if you buy one Apple iPhone 10, you get one Apple stock. Maybe that would be, you know, sort of justifying of its price.
I mean, it would probably need that at this point, because
it needs some push.
And also the phone itself, which is nice, is not fantastic. You know,
blown people's mind.
It hasn't blown people's mind. I mean, the form factor is nice, but in terms of performance, it doesn't really do that much more than the 8 or the 7. Mm. You know, if you have those models, they're still very good phones.
Speaking of the 8, they're going to maintain the number of production targets for the 7, 7 Plus and the 8 and 8 Plus for around 30 million units. The other interesting thing is that apparently they are reportedly to come out with a 6.1 LCD iPhone that will launch this year instead of OLED, because I think, again, they're realizing maybe cost is something, because OLED is way too expensive to make and, you know, it takes longer to produce OLED. So maybe moving back to an LCD iPhone display might work better.
Well,
so
it might work better, but the opposition is making phones at that quality for far less.
Yeah,
so there has to be something wrong in the logistics chain somewhere. Yes. Either they're overpaying for things, or whether their own internal development is becoming so expensive that the phones themselves are not competitive anymore.
Mm. Well, if you're an owner of the iPhone 10, then another thing to be proud of. You're, you know, one of the fewer people to
have. Yeah, exactly. You know, it might
something
be
something to shout about. One of the little brags that you can have, because
it might
love
be a rare antique. It might sit on someone's shelf next to a Scion organizer one day.
Wow. Yeah. Let's talk about Geek Tunes, Matt. What do we have?
We have the return of a band called The Wombats. Now, you might remember them from earlier in the noughties. So I think they first came out around 2007, 2008. They've been releasing records ever since then, but they kind of lost their way a bit. Mm. They've returned to form this year. This is their third single from the forthcoming album. This is The Wombats with Cheetah Tongue.
BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.